going on, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls? It is Friday, November 3rd, 2023. And I'm your host, as always, the Pody. Dun 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 dun. We're back, episode number 224 of This Week in Sports. We've got a lot to talk about. I've got notes out the wazoo to get to, and it's almost 9 o'clock here on the East Coast, and we've got NBA in-season tournament action going on that I'm trying to keep up with. You've got a slate of games on ESPN, Bucks and Knicks right now. My Nets are playing in Chicago on this ugly-ass red court that you can barely see anything. It's hurting my eyes, quite frankly. Wait till you see the Lakers' yellow court later on. But anyway, there is a lot to talk about. I'm excited to be here for the second straight week on another Friday. And I'm happy to say that I will be doing an episode of Through the Ringer tomorrow at some point, probably in the evening or nighttime. So look out for that ahead of Sunday's NFL action, because we have an early game in Germany. So we will be doing a episode tomorrow of Through the Ringer. It will actually be live and in person at my house. The boys are getting together for that episode. Hopefully, anyway, that's the plan as of right now. Things could change, you never know. So, with that being said, a lot has taken place this week. Because I have a lot to talk about, I will not be giving my NFL picks. I won't be giving my NFL picks on this show. You'll have to listen to tomorrow's episode of Through the Ringer for all of that. So, without further ado, let's just jump into this glorious episode. Okay, so let's get to our weekend roundup. If you missed it, I am here to inform you of the latest in the college football world. Nothing crazy, but to start off, Kansas, they put a wrinkle in Oklahoma's college football plans, knocking off the Sooners 38-33. Oklahoma, you know, they're a powerhouse name, but no Lincoln Riley anymore, right? The guy from Clemson comes in, takes over, and they've had a really good season. Dylan Gabriel has been really good, the lefty there, and they were undefeated and kind of a Cinderella, if you will. Not really, but you get the idea. And Kansas spoils it. So it's going to be difficult for Oklahoma. They're not out of it, but it's going to be difficult for them to climb into that top four. Anything could still happen. For Kansas, it's the first time beating Oklahoma since 1997, and KU fans celebrated. They went bonkers. They carried the goalposts all the way into nearby Potter Lake, and I'm talking up a hill, like just crazy stuff. Insane. It took like 30 people to carry a goalpost. And this is, let me tell you, this is not the Kansas of old. They went to zero bowl games from 2009 to 2021. This is not just a basketball school. Little foreshadowing. I'll get to that in a second. Lance Leipold has clinched his second straight bowl berth and could even factor into the Big 12 title race with them being 6-2. The former six-time D3 national champ is one of the hottest names in college football right now, so look for his name as possible replacements down the line at some of these bigger Power 5 schools. Now, Kansas gets all the glory for this weekend for the big upset of Oklahoma, right? But NC State beat Clemson, and head coach Dave Doran, let's just say he let Steve Smith know they aren't just a basketball school. Now, what I mean by that is Steve Smith was on College Game Day ahead of Utah's big tilt there, which was just a bloodbath. But anyway, he's on game day, and he's talking about this game, and he says Clemson's going to win, and basically that NC State is getting ready for basketball season. Take a listen to this clip. It is an all-timer.
Clemson has been struggling. They're not the Clemson we've loved over the years. But NC State, unfortunately, they're waiting for basketball to start.
Yeah, you're right. Tell Steve Smith in the studio, this ain't a basketball school. He can kiss my ass.
Ho ho, them's his fighting words, baby. Wow. So you got to love the response there from the head coach. Of course, you know, his players, that's going to fire them up and everything. And yeah, Clemson not really having a good season this year at 4-4. And oh, there's another doozy. Dabo Sweeney has a spot on a local radio show nightly or once a week or whatever it is. And some fan called up and ripped Dabo saying, you know, why should we be paying you, or why do you deserve a salary of $11.5 million when you're 4-4 this year and blah, blah, blah. And Dabo let the kid talk for a while, and then he just eviscerated him and fans like him, and he started laying out every single point as to why he's paid so much and how they hadn't won in 35 years until he got there. They've won 2 national championships in 7 years, and you know what? He's absolutely right. Without Dabo Sweeney, Clemson would be nothing, okay? So this is just fan overreaction to one bad season. Everybody has a bad season, let's just face it. Okay, the first college football playoff rankings are here, and surprisingly, I don't know if it's so surprising, but because they played probably their best football of the year, but Georgia is not number one in the first college football rankings, but again, you just have to be in the top 4 to make the CFP, right? So you have Ohio State at number 1 right now. Michigan comes in at 3. Of course, Georgia's 2 there. Florida State, to me, Florida State's the interesting one. I don't know if they're as good as the big boys, but they're undefeated and they're still pretty good, but they play in a weaker conference, ACC, so I'm not sure what to make of them because they barely beat Boston College. They've had some scares here and there. They haven't looked like 100% great, but they're sort of starting to hit their stride a little bit. Then you've got Washington at 5, Oregon at 6, Texas at 7, Bama at 8, Oklahoma at 9, and Ole Miss at 10. And I believe last week I said the team that was ranked 10th in the nation, it just popped in my head, had lost like 4 straight weeks or something, and I want to say Penn State was ranked 10th last week, and I said, oh, there's no way they're going to lose. They're going to cover it against Indiana. It was a huge spread. Everything I said about last week was wrong, and I'm so glad that I ended up not betting because I really thought about it. I was like, I don't like anything. So thank God I stayed away because Penn State barely escaped that one. It was way closer than it should have been. So yeah, that's your top 10 of the early college football playoff rankings. Oh, and by the way, shout out to Air Force. Got to give them some love. They come in at number 25. Not many people realize this, but Air Force is 8-0 through 9 weeks. So I don't know if they're for real. I don't know how much noise they'll make if they'll get a New Year's Six Bowl or not, but that's pretty darn impressive from an academy school to be 8-0 and one of, what, 5 remaining undefeated teams, something like that. So pretty impressive. And one final thought, Ohio State, they're playing my Rutgers Scarlet Knights tomorrow, my alma mater. So just got to say, Ryan Day and Marvin Harrison Jr. and company, enjoy that number one spot for the next 12 hours or so because you're going down. Guys, I don't actually mean that. Although it would be cool, I'm not a delusional Rutgers fan like some that actually think we have a chance to win this game, but it has been a phenomenal season for Rutgers. They're bowl eligible. They're 6-2. And hey, if Michigan wasn't stealing signs against them, about a month or so ago, we might have won that game because we were very much in it throughout that first half. And then the wheels came off because, you know, Michigan went into halftime. They're like, all right, guys, let's bring out the cheat sheet. We know what they're doing. Let's go. So, you know what? At home, I like our chances against Ohio State. Okay, some sad news to report. A lot of sad news today on this on this episode, but it's not intentional. It's just facts, and it's part of the story and part of my reporting. So, by now, I'm sure everyone has heard about this. I don't know if many have seen the video. I have seen the video. I don't suggest watching it, although it's a very far away, kind of grainy video a little bit. You are fully aware, and you can fully understand what's going on. And it's just sends goosebumps down my spine thinking about it. But Former NHL forward Adam Johnson, 29 years old. He died after a freak accident when his neck was pretty much sliced open by an opposing player's skate during a game in Britain's top hockey league. So Adam Johnson is a former NHL player. He obviously fizzled out of the league. So like many, like with football and even NBA players, you'll go and play overseas. So he was playing overseas in Britain's top hockey league. And there was a play. He was skating up the left side of the ice with the puck, I believe. And there was a collision with a player in front of him. And this guy on the opposing team, I've never seen anything like it. Now, I've not watched a lot of hockey in my lifetime, but he actually spins, falling forward into this other player, and just spins and does a karate kick to the guy's neck. And it was brutal, and it looked intentional. I'm sure he didn't intend to kill this man or kick him in the neck, but you come to find out that this guy is one of the dirtiest players in the league. He's been suspended multiple times this year, multiple times in the past. So he's very well known as a dirty, dirty player in this league. And many online are calling for him to be charged with involuntary manslaughter. And I know an investigation is underway. So it's just brutal. The video shows him get hit in the neck and, you know, you're not thinking anything of it, but these are literal blades that can kill you. And he gets up, grabbing his neck, and immediately just blood. He hit a main artery, clearly. Blood is just, it's, again, it's like a movie. It's like a horror film. I've never seen anything like it. Just the amount of blood, you don't realize it because it's so real, and we don't see this stuff in our everyday lives or experience it. Unless you're, you know, a trauma nurse or doctor or an EMT maybe, or a police officer or something, and you come upon a gruesome car accident or whatever the case may be. Few and far between, you get the idea. But to see the blood just coming out like a faucet, and he actually gets up and he tries to like skate over to the sideline, and you know, he just loses too much blood too quickly. Now, I'm not too familiar with this, but I know this happened to an NHL player. Maybe it was a goalie or something in the late 80s, something like that. And this, from my understanding, that one happened on the proper side of the ice where they were able to get him medical attention immediately. And a medical personnel literally shoved his hand into his neck and stopped, like pinched the artery and saved his life. And that guy is still alive today and has since talked about it. But because apparently this occurred with Adam Johnson on the wrong side of the ice, they couldn't get to him in time. And that's how quickly he bled out. Just devastating, devastating. He's from Minnesota. My heart goes out to his family and loved ones. I believe he had either a fiance or a serious girlfriend, or might have been married. Just awful, awful, awful stuff. And I know the NHL, one of the teams, I forget exactly who, they announced that they are going to be implementing some sort of neck guard. So that is in the works. We're going to try to obviously learn from this. It's surprising that there hasn't been anything implemented yet in 2023 to protect somebody's neck. But I'm sure they're working on something, and they just got to get a comfortable fit, something that will, you know, not constrict their airways or their, you know, anything like that. And it will protect them and all that good stuff. But just a crazy freak accident. But again, was it? This was a dirty play, as many online are suggesting. And, you know, if you have the stomach for it, maybe go and watch it, but that's totally up to you. I'm not suggesting that anyone go and see that video because it is gruesome. Okay, Tyson Fury, he fought over the weekend. I did not watch this fight myself, but it was a big deal. He survived a 10-round bout. Yes, it went the full 10 rounds. Former UFC champion Francis Ngannou actually could have won this match. He got a Fury. He hit him pretty good. He fell down. This was played in Saudi Arabia, so I think it took this match was in Saudi Arabia, so I think it was probably, I think it was like in the early afternoon or something on Saturday. So yeah, it was interesting. But Tyson Fury won the split decision, and the champ, even though he was knocked down, like I said, it was the third round. Impressive by Ngannou. This was his first ever professional boxing match, so impressive to see how athletic and how adaptable this guy is. I'm looking over real quick just to check the Nets score. It's halftime, it looks like, and Dorian Finney-Smith has 16 points at the half. Go figure for the Nets. The Nets are up 59-58 so far in their first in-season tournament game, whatever you want to call it. The Cavs are beating the the Pacers are beating the Cavs 97-95 with 8 minutes left. The Knicks are down 10 to the Bucks at halftime. The Heat are up 58-48 with a little under 4 minutes in the first half, and the Warriors are up 58-50 with 4 minutes and 42 seconds left in the first half. And let's see how Steph Curry's doing. He's got 9 points. He's made 2 threes. I threw a free $5 bet on Curry to make 7 or more threes tonight, which pays $17. So we'll see. I didn't like any bets. I didn't want to throw my money out there just to throw it out there because I had a great weekend into Monday night. Was it Monday night? Yeah, Monday night where I won. So I was up over $400 on the weekend with my football, which totally made up for week 7. But anyway, I digress. I'll talk about that in a minute. All right, let's talk about some NBA now. Let's get into this. So obviously the NBA season is about a week into things or so. We had Zach LaVine with the first 50-point game. He dropped 51 to be exact. Now, there was a lot of 50-point games last year. I want to say like 12 or so. We had 2 71-point performances, I believe, by Damian Lillard and Donovan Mitchell. 71 or 72. So a lot of scoring last year. I don't expect that to slow down anytime soon. But some interesting notes on the Zach LaVine 50-point burger. Chicago scored only 102 points in their 16-point loss to Detroit. So he had half of their points. He had 0 assists, marking the 33rd time in history someone dropped 50 without an assist. And you're thinking, holy crap, that's happened that many times. Well, 16 of those instances belong to Wilt Chamberlain. So there you go. It's also the 11th time someone had 50 with no assists in a loss. The first since Kevin Love in 2012. In other NBA news, Steph Curry is still cooking, even at the age of 35. He's already had 2 40-point games this season, and since turning 30 years old, he has 34 career 40-point games. If that sounds like a lot, it's because only Michael Jordan has more with 44. Chris Paul, who is now on the Warriors, he has come off the bench for the first time in his 19-year career, which is just unbelievable. Find me another player that goes 19 years before they come off the bench. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable stat right there. Crazy. We had Victor Wembanyama, the former the number one overall pick from this year's draft. He is dialed in. He had his second double-double of the season last night, dropping an incredible 38-10 in another solid win for the Spurs last night. They held on to beat the Phoenix Suns. I believe they were up as many as, did I read right? Maybe 27? Something like that. The Suns came all the way back, but Wembanyama in the fourth quarter, he's one of the highest scoring performers this season in the fourth quarter. LeBron is number one. Steph is up there. Wembanyama, I want to say maybe Doncic is another one up there. But he closed this game out. This is where I really started to see the wow factor from Wembanyama. Because, you know, he's 7'4". You haven't really quite seen it just yet putting it all together. But no, I saw it last night in these highlights. He pulling up in transition, just turning and hitting threes. I mean, just he looked unbelievable, posterizing people, and he closed this one out 38-10, got the double-double. He's on my fantasy team. I'm ecstatic to have him, and he just was just ridiculous. Just ridiculous. Now, one more point on this, because this is just classic. So they played the Rockets a few games ago. And of course, Dylan Brooks plays for the Rockets, and he's the biggest boob in the NBA. And of course, he ran his mouth, and he basically said he's not impressed by Wembanyama, or they asked him about him, and he just basically said this.
What is some of your major takeaways from seeing Wemby for the first time in person?
He's tall. That's really it.
He He's tall. That's really it. I mean, what a boob. So when they played, Wembanyama let him know what was up, scoring 21 and 12. That was his other double-double. And they beat the Rockets 126-122. And let's just call it what it is. Dylan Brooks is known, like I said, for being a big boob because he also talked crap last year, basically got himself traded off of the Memphis Grizzlies because he thought he's all that and he's just not, and he prides himself as some big defensive stalwart, and basically said LeBron was old, said he doesn't respect anyone until they score 40 on him, and then he proceeded to hit LeBron in the nether region and get himself ejected, and I think he got traded shortly after that. So what a boob. But he's not the biggest boob in the NBA, or even the biggest boob in the NBA this year. That honor goes to one James Harden, who was traded once again. We got a Woj bomb at 2 o'clock in the morning the other night. And yes, Harden got traded for the fourth time now. It's the most ever for a former MVP to be traded. And it's all happened within the last, every year he's been traded pretty much the last 3 years. Just ridiculous. So anyway, Harden got introduced with the Clippers. So first of all, let me tell you this. He wanted to go to LA, and that's the only team he wanted to go to. Answer me this. There's one rock. You've got Russell Westbrook, who's there now. You've got Paul George, and you've got Kawhi Leonard, and now you've got James Harden. How the hell is that going to work? Okay, whatever. We'll figure it out. We'll see. But their title odds have taken a jump. They have the best odds to come out of the West. I do not see this happening. This is going to blow up like it did in Brooklyn because you have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, who are two of the biggest load management guys. So good luck. Anyway, James Harden was introduced with the Clippers, I don't know, yesterday, maybe the day before, whatever it was, and he gave us one of the great sports quotes of all time. This is just, it's incredible. It's hilarious. It is hilarious that James Harden thinks of himself this way. Listen to this quote. First of all, he went to Philly or forced his way to Philly from Brooklyn because his buddy Daryl Morey was there, and he loves Daryl Morey and he'll give him the keys to the castle, and now all of a sudden he hates Daryl Morey, and Daryl Morey apparently promised him the world and then didn't, reneged on it, and blah, 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 blah. So anyway, he said he felt like he was on a leash in Philly, but listen to this whole clip, please. It's gold. I enhanced the audio just for you guys so you could hear this in its full glory.
When I'm in a leash, I'm not in just shooting the basketball every time. I think the game, and I'm a creator on the court. You know what I mean? So if I got a voice to where I can, hey, coach, I see this. You know, what you think about this? Then it's like, all right, okay. Somebody that trusts me, that believes in me, that understands me, that I'm just not a, you know, I'm not a system player. I am a system. You know what I mean? So.
Oh, please enlighten us, James. We don't know what you mean. I'm not a system player. I am a system. Oh, baby, is that one of the great quotes of all time. It's awesome that he thinks that highly of himself. I mean, wow. What happened from OKC, where you were coming off the bench as a sixth man, to now, where you think that you are, yeah, granted, he led the league in assists last year, and sure, he helped Embiid to an MVP, and all that is all great and everything, but in Brooklyn, in the playoffs, whether you were hurt or not, you came back, and you couldn't help KD and the Nets get past the Milwaukee Bucks in 7 games. You had a chance, you had them right where you wanted them, and you couldn't do it. And then you refused to play for the Nets because you were pissed off that Kyrie Irving wouldn't get vaccinated. I'm convinced that this man just goes from one place to the next to the next, and all he cares about is himself. He clearly doesn't care about winning a championship because last year was an absolute disaster. 2 years ago when he forced his way out of Brooklyn. And then, of course, you had Kyrie Irving then force his way out, and then KD gets traded, and they blew up the whole thing. So He's a cancer. You're not winning a championship with him, all right? He's past his prime. He's fat hardened now. Who knows if he's been working out? I'm over it. I wish the Clippers nothing but the best. Good luck with this guy. Good riddance. I'm glad he's out of the East. Have fun with him. You're going to realize after this season when he's gone yet again to his next team. Absolute joke. But, just a classic. I'm not a system. I am the system. I mean, that gives me such Heisenberg vibes, Walter White. You know, I am the danger, right? Just glorious. Love sports. I love it. Okay, Luka Doncic, he's been on a mission. He almost had the first 50-point game against my Brooklyn Nets, that one being a 49-pointer. I think that was on last Friday. 125-120 win there. But the point of this, talking about Luka, is he is the first player in NBA history to lead a team outright in points, rebounds, and assists in each of the first three games of a season. Just wild, wild. And that's all I got for the NBA right now, but let me just give you a quick update. Warriors up 69-67 at half. Let's get an update on Stephen Curry. He's got three threes in the first half. Okay. My brother's got a solid bet going. He needs at least seven threes, and my brother will win like $270 or something like that. If he hits eight threes, my brother will win, I got it right here, will win $425 plus another $250 plus another $182 because he kind of secured the bag. He's looking for guarantees. So what he did was he bet Steph Curry to make six threes as a consolation, bet him to make seven, and bet him to make eight, all at $50 or more. So if he were to hit all three, I mean, this is going to cash out for let's see, what is that, 425. We're talking $852 if Steph Curry makes eight threes in this game. Now, at the worst, it's looking like he will make six because he's halfway to six at halftime, and it's high-scoring game. It's a two-point game, so he's on pace there. My brother's a nut job. If he didn't bet on, play so many slots or anything like that, or roulette, really, he'd be up $4,000 this month alone because he lost $4,000 on the slots and everything and roulette. But last night he hit on Derrick Henry plus 155 anytime touchdown. He bet that for $100. And then he bet on Victor Wembanyama, which he seemingly has been betting almost every night. He bet him to double-double, and he put that down for $100, and he won $420. So he's on an absolute tear of late, and yeah, it's just making me a little jealous. That's why I had to put a little freebie, $5, on Steph to hit seven or more threes. Anyway, what's going on with the Knicks game? I digress a little bit. The Heat are up 60-54 at half. The Bucks are starting to pull away from the Knicks. No surprise there. They're at home. That's on ESPN right now, 62-48. Pacers 113, Cavs 106. That's a bit surprising. And that's it. The rest of the games are at half. Okay, we shall continue. Okay, let's get into a recap of the NFL. Again, like I said, I'm not going to get into the games for this weekend. I will do that on tomorrow's episode of Through the Ringer. Let's start off with a battle of the number one overall quarterback versus the number two overall pick quarterback in Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. Texans were favored in this one by 3.5. I thought they would probably win this game. I was not going anywhere near it or touching it. And surprisingly, the Panthers get their first win of the season, 15-13. This went about as expected. Two middle-of-the-road teams. Panthers are not middle-of-the-road, really. They're bottom feeders. But Texans have been pretty decent this year, and they've had some good fight in them. But the Panthers, I believe, kicked a game-winning field goal at the end of this game and won it. Bryce Young got the better of CJ Stroud, you could say, in this game, but this was no big, feat. Frankie Louvu, the former New York Jet, though, for the Panthers, he finished with a game-high 12 tackles. Pretty impressive performance from him. But, yeah, overall, nothing to write home about with that game. The Cowboys impressed, beating the Rams 43-20. This is a tough team to figure out. They looked okay against the Chargers on Sunday night, but then they come out against the Rams, and they look like they did in the first couple of weeks in the season. They look legit. Now, let me tell you, the Rams are starting to falter. No Kyren Williams. It's starting to show. Matthew Stafford got beat up. He was in and out of this game, and I believe he's going to be out Sunday, and Brett Rypien is going to be starting. I'm not 100%, but I'm pretty sure on that. They had to abandon the run game pretty quickly. Cowboys held Puka Nacua in check. I think they're starting to figure out that defense since Diggs went down, and their back end and some of the other players that they've lost. So yeah, big time win, 43-20 for the Cowboys, setting up a big game against the Eagles. Okay, the Dolphins beat the Patriots. No real surprise there. That should have been one of my picks. I went against it, though, and I went with the Jets instead and got the push, but that's with my picks. But anyway, no real surprise here. Tua improves to, I want to say it's 6-0 against Belichick. He completed 30 of 45 for 324, 3 touchdowns, and 1 interception. Again, the Dolphins have been very good against teams 500 or below. Against good teams, they have not been good. And they're going to be playing a good team, and the Chiefs coming off a loss, and it's going to be interesting to see that. Because a lot of people are expecting it to be a close game. I do like the Chiefs in that game. As long as I know Mahomes is not feeling the flu symptoms anymore and he's good to go, I like the Chiefs in a bounce back. And I wonder if Taylor Swift will be in attendance this time. She wasn't there last week. I know she's got her Eras tour. Who knows? Maybe she made a stop in Germany. Maybe. Probably not. The Vikings beat the Packers 24-10. The Vikings improved to 4-4 somehow, but unfortunately they suffered the worst injury loss you could suffer. Kirk Cousins tore his Achilles. Guys, yes, yet another quarterback, or excuse me, not only quarterback, but another player this year to tear their Achilles. It's just awful. Kirk Cousins was playing some of the best football of his life, and he will now be out for the season. Just awful. And replacing him, they did trade for Josh Dobbs. I'll get into that a little bit later, or maybe I won't now that I mentioned it, but they traded for, you know, Dobbs, and I don't think he's going to play this week. They're going to be playing the rookie from BYU in all likelihood. I forgot his name, something Hill maybe. I'll get to that a little bit later. Just some foreshadowing there. The Jets, baby, they beat the Giants just like I predicted, but it was a lot closer than I thought, and we really should have lost the ball, but we somehow came back, beat the Giants 13-10 in overtime in what was probably the most watched game of the week.
Oh my God.
I'm being facetious when I say that. It was raining. There was, 24 total punts in this game. It was just an absolute disaster. Tyrod Taylor went down. The Jersey kid Tommy DeVito comes in, and he actually runs in a touchdown in the second half after the Jets got a roughing call on fourth down, which would have forced them to kick the field goal and tie the game. And it looked like the Jets were going to lose after giving up a whopping 8 passing yards in this game. It was just awful. And somehow, some way, the Jets figured it out and were able to win. Let me just play you some bit of that ending. So here's what happened. 4th and 10, Zach Wilson takes a sack at the hands of Kayvon Thibodeau. Game over, right? Minute 30 left. Jets only have 2 timeouts. Jets burn those 2 timeouts, bring out they stop him, get it to 4th and 1. Okay, Brian Daboll has a decision to make. Go for this 4th and 1, get it, end the game, point blank, period. Go for it, don't get it. Okay, now Jets have 24 seconds to somehow get a field goal, no timeouts, or whatever it is. 3rd option was the pretty good option. You have a very good kicker in Graham Gano, and it's a 35-yard chip shot field goal. But it's in the rain. Graham Gano apparently has a swollen knee on his plant leg, which I didn't even know about. So he sends out the field goal unit on 4th and 1. And what the Jets did was Will McDonald, he kind of got through the line. He lined up to the side of the right guard. There was some question whether this was legal or illegal according to the Giants people. But by rule, everywhere I saw it was legal. and he rushed through the line and he actually jumped and he definitely affected Graham Gano's kick because he tried to keep it away from him and kicked it to the left and he pushed it left or pulled it left and the kick was no good. So it's like, oh my God, the Jets now only need a field goal to tie this game. Yeah, there's only 24 seconds, but we have a chance. It's not like against the Patriots where we were down 5 and needed a Hail Mary. So first play, well, I'll just let it unfold for you in all its glory. Here we go. Jets take over, 24 seconds left. Here we go.
Lawrence is in the backfield. Wilson escapes, throws on the run. He's got a man. First down. Jets have to hurry, though. Lazard, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Wilson with 1 second. Kick on the way, and it is good for the win. Kick on the way.
Listen, this by no means was a pretty game. And yes, the Jets got away with spotting their own ball with one, you know, getting it up to the line and spiking it with 1 second left. Zach Wilson, I don't know what he was doing. And granted, that was the second play when that video I just showed. The first play, there was 24 seconds left. He throws it over the middle to Garrett Wilson. There's a penalty on the play, which stopped the clock because, again, he threw it over the middle. I want to hope and believe he threw it over the middle because he knew they were offside or whatever the call was. I don't remember. And they had a free play, so it was going to stop the clock. But if he didn't know that and he threw over the middle with 17 seconds left and no timeouts, then basically you're ending the game because they would have had to run up there, spike it, and now you really only have one chance to throw this up to the end zone because they were not in field goal range at that point. So he rolls out, throws this to Lazard, again, over the middle. And by the time he rolls out, you have to know in your head, the game's over. You're not going to have enough time because the ref has to get the ball spotted. But, oh my God, it was heads up by the Jets. They grabbed the ball. They spotted it themselves. The refs didn't say anything, and they spiked it with 1 second left. And I just want to say, thank God my New York Jets have Greg the Leg Zuerlein on our team. He smoked this right down the middle, sending it to overtime. There was never a question. And then in overtime, I wanted the Jets to start on defense. So I was very glad we lost the coin flip because we were the away team technically. We called tails. It was heads. I always call heads personally. I know they say tails never fails, but heads is the way to go, in my opinion. But it was the one time, and I was saying this over and over again, and I felt like this the first game of the season, September 11th on Monday night, that I thought our best chance to win was going to be on defense. So the Jets were on defense first, and Tommy DeVito, this guy wasn't throwing the ball at all. They were just trying to be very cautious, and they get to a 3rd and 20-something. They try a screen, and we actually snuffed it out, almost picked it off. It hit, I think, Quinnen Williams tipped it. So we get the punt, and I'm just like, please, God, don't muff the punt. Do not muff the punt. So we get the ball there, and then we have a 3rd and 10, and Zach Wilson throws a very nice ball to Garrett Wilson. I want to say there's a penalty on this play, but he's able to get up as he's falling down, catches it, gets up, gets the first. Would have been a first regardless. Boom. Got that. And then the next 3rd and 10, he throws a deep ball down the side towards, I don't know, like the 10 or 15-yard line, and it was underthrown, but it was underthrown perfectly because Adoree Jackson could never turn around. It's just one of those things where you're trying to catch the receiver and you don't know where the ball is and the receiver slows down and you run into the receiver, and it was beautifully done. And, you know, the Jets get the pass interference play, and now it sets up a 33-yard field goal. And I was like, oh God, I want the Jets to cover because I picked them on the podcast -3. And I know if they kick a field goal, they only win by 3. Although I bet the Jets -2.5 because I'm smart. I know about hooks, and I won lots of money betting the Eagles and Jets with those hooks. Dropped the Eagles from 7 to 6.5 and Jets from 3 to 2.5. And I won big on that parlay. And then I put also Seattle in there -2.5 on a separate parlay. But anyway, they set up the 33-yard field goal. I'm like, Gano missed the 35-yarder. If they miss this, we probably tie and I lose my bet and everything else, right? So they don't elect to run any more plays because they're on their third center as it is. So they bring out Zuerlein for the 33-yarder, and God, he hooked it a little bit. It was dangerous. I was a little uneasy that it went in. I knew it went in, but I was like, oh my God, until I saw, you know, the announcers yelling that they won and the refs put their hands up that it went through. I was, you know, my heart stopped for a minute. This game was one of the most agonizing 3 hours of football I've ever watched of my New York Jets. And I'm talking, I've seen, you know, the playoffs in what, 09, 010 against the Colts, against the Patriots. I've seen it all. This one gave me more palpitations than any other Jets game I think I've ever watched. I don't know if it was because of the Jets-Giants rivalry. I don't know exactly what it was, but I think I was just flabbergasted at the fact that I was so confident my team was going to win this by double digits that the fact that we came out this bad after a bye for the second straight year and somehow were this bad against a third-string quarterback that was told not to throw the ball pretty much was ungodly. But I think it's a good sign. Our O-line is really banged up. We added Roger Saffold to our O-line because we had to put two guys on IR. One of our O-linemen, I'm drawing a blank on exactly who it was because we've just had so many injuries. Al Woods tore his Achilles. Again, another player torn Achilles on this freaking MetLife turf. I can't stand it. So many injuries. Tippmann, our rookie center, he's now going on IR. We just have so many issues right now with our O-line, so we added him, Saffold, to beef things up. But I just think the Jets, and especially Zach Wilson, can't play in the rain. We saw it against the Patriots, could only score 10 points. It's something about the rain on this field, whatever it is. I'm just going to chalk it up. Everyone wanted to rag on Wilson, you know, but we forget that he played very well for the previous 3 weeks before that. So I think on Monday night with some clear skies at home against a Chargers team that I'm not fearful of. Yeah, they have a good offense at times, but against a good defense, they tend to struggle and their defense is bad. So I think that Zach Wilson can look very good. And I think the Jets can pull off a win and get to 5-3. If the Jets want to say that they're a playoff team, this is the game that they have to win because this is a team that was in the playoffs and this is a team that you should beat if you're going to be a playoff team. Yeah, you're going to have to get ahead of them in the standings. So go win this game on Monday night and show the world what you're made of. But wow, what a game. Okay, the Eagles held on to beat the Commanders by exactly 7, 38-31. This Washington team seems to give the Eagles trouble every year the last few years. It's just strange. A.J. Brown was at it again. He hauled in 8 for 130 and 2 TDs. He is now the first player in NFL history to post 6 straight games of 125 or more receiving yards. Eagles have the best record in the NFL, by the way, and the New York Jets still the only team to beat them. Thank you. Before the Steelers beat the Titans on Thursday Night Football yesterday, they lost 20-10 to the Jaguars. The Jaguars actually are the hottest team in football, having won 5 in a row, and they're a serious threat at this time. It's worth noting, by the way, that Matt Canada came out of the booth last night for the Thursday night game for the first time in his career. That's the Steelers. The Steelers offensive coordinator. Whether it helped or not, I'm not really sure. Steelers looked okay. I mean, they've gotten a boost since Deontay Johnson came back, but really they could have lost that game. It came down to the wire. Will Levis threw an interception in the end zone, kind of desperation throw at the end, down 4 with a couple seconds left on the clock. But Steelers, man, somehow they're 5-3. The Saints beat the Colts 38-27. I've actually come to the realization that the Colts are not a good team per se, but they are a fun team to watch. They score a lot of points. They give up a lot of points. They've been good for my fantasy team with Michael Pittman and Zach Moss, so keep it up. But the Saints are a team that has struggled mightily to score points. We've seen the frustration boiling over to the sidelines actually during games and stuff like that, right? So for the fact that they were able to put up 38 just speaks volumes to how bad the Colts defense is. And, you know, again, they're not a great team, but they've been fun to watch. Minshew Mania, all that good stuff. But yeah, the Saints got a much needed victory. The Titans beat the Falcons 28-23. This was the Will Levis game, and let me just tell you, he passes the eye test. Even last night, you can see he's got the touch. He's got the deep ball down. He does some good things. Even up against that really good Steelers defense, he gave them a chance. He opens things up for that offense. And sorry, Ryan Tannehill, you just probably lost your job, whether you're hurt or not. But what Levis in his first game goes 19 of 29 for 238 and 4 touchdowns, including 3 to DeAndre Hopkins. It's like, really? I played DeAndre Hopkins in fantasy this past week, and he is the reason, essentially, I lost. I put up the third or fourth most points in the league, and I lost. And I was coming in as one of the hottest teams, and I really needed that win, but it's okay. Let's see. The Seahawks came back to beat the Browns, scoring a game-winning touchdown with, what, in the final 30 seconds, I believe that was. And let's see. Yeah, 24-20 was your final. And again, the Seahawks, they covered the 3.5. That was my third pick in my three-leg parlay. I did a two-team parlay with the Jets and the Eagles. And then I did another three-team, another parlay that included the Seahawks this time with the Jets and Eagles. Both of them hit for big money. So that was a big, big week for me. I needed that after week 7. And the Seahawks, yeah, they turned the ball. It was sloppy. Both teams turned the ball over a bunch. This shouldn't have been this close. Seahawks missed out on points right before the half with a Geno interception, et cetera, et cetera. But Seahawks are squarely in the mix, man. They're one of those playoff-type contending teams once again. The Bengals beat the 49ers 31-17. It is shocking to think the Niners have lost 3 in a row after starting 5-0. But that's the state of things right now. Brock Purdy is not playing good football, and the 49ers D is giving up huge chunks. And on the flip side, Joe Burrow and company are starting to get hot at just the right time. I always like to, you know, rag on them for their early season woes and whatnot, and I thought they might have been out of it. I don't think they're going to win the division, but don't count them out. They are a scary team, and if they're getting ready and getting hot at this moment, look out. Hey, it was good. It's good for my fantasy team, at least, having Joe Burrow as my QB. The Broncos, you could say they stunned the Chiefs, but yes, the Broncos beat the Chiefs 24-9. They finally ended their 16-game losing streak against the Kansas City Chiefs, and this one wasn't all that close either. The Broncos led wire to wire. I think as close as it was 14-10. We found out before the game that Patrick Mahomes was dealing with the flu or flu-like symptoms. His whole family's sick. And the weather coming in was supposed to be lots of snow between 6 inches and 2 feet. There was snow early in the morning. I guess they cleared it off the field and everything, and it was just very cold. And I don't really know if Mahomes being sick factored into this or not, because it wasn't that close. But, you know, no Taylor Swift. Travis Kelce didn't have his best game, and the Broncos won this one. And guess who predicted it? Guess who called Broncos money line? If the Jets game didn't go to overtime, I would have bet this. If my bets cashed before the 4 p.m. games would have started, I said I was putting money on Broncos money line. If you don't believe me, go back and listen to the last week's episode of Through the Ringer, the 1 hour and 5 minute mark. I said it. I said Broncos money line, cash it. And guess what? They ended the 16-game losing streak, and they cashed it. And for Patrick Mahomes, this is an unbelievable stat. It is the first time in his career that he has lost on the road against a divisional opponent. Unbelievable. Play it long enough, and you know you'll lose eventually, but that is just one insane stat. Okay, the Ravens continued their winning ways. They're one of the hottest teams in football, having won 3 in a row. They beat the Cardinals 31-24, but thanks to a late onside kick recovery and field goal, the Cardinals spoiled Ravens bettors and covered the 9.5. They were down 10. They got an onside kick recovery and kicked a field goal and only lost 31-24. Unbelievable. I almost bet that game, too. I was very confident in the Ravens, but these big spreads have not been cashing as highly as you think, and the overs have not been cashing at all this year. Crazy. The Chargers beat the Bears 30-13. Not really much to talk about here. This one went about as expected. Herbert, 298, 3 touchdowns. They actually looked pretty good in this game, but again, it's the Bears. Tyson Bagen, great story the week before. Gets his first win in his first career start, but he came back down to earth in this one. No touchdowns, 232 yards only, and 2 interceptions. The Lions bounced back nicely, beating the Raiders on Monday Night Football. I hit a nice little parlay in this one. Jimmy G, man, came in, had a really good record on Monday Night games, and not good. He was 10 for 21 for 126 yards, about a 46 or 47% completion percentage, no touchdowns, one interception, and this interception was crucial because the Lions were winning. It might have been like 10-7. Then they fumbled the ball. The Raiders got it in plus territory, and Jimmy G, first play, throws, doesn't see the safety, and throws it into the corner of the end zone, and it's picked easily, and it was downhill from there. As for the Lions, they bounced back from an ugly loss to the Ravens. They improved to 6-2. Imagine that. Lions are 6-2. Since this game, this is the game that broke the camel's back. This was the last straw for Mark Davis, apparently. Josh McDaniels and GM Dave Ziegler were both fired after this performance. Done, gone. They've named Antonio Pierce, their linebackers coach, as the interim head coach. Apparently, the players are ready to go to war for Antonio Pierce, the former Super Bowl champion with the New York Giants. The players love him. We'll see how that pans out. But Josh McDaniels, man, he's failed now everywhere he's been except New England. He went 9-16 at the helm and 3-5 this year. Devontae Adams has been visibly upset and is probably going to leave after this year. Hope he comes to the Jets, reunite with Rodgers. But Josh, I mean, think about all that went on with McDaniels, right? Josh Jacobs nearly held out in the offseason. They got rid of Darren Waller and Derek Carr. How's that worked out? They brought in Jimmy G on this big four-year contract. And here's the thing of it. They just benched Jimmy G now. Aiden O'Connell's going to start. We know that. I'm not going to defend Josh McDaniels. Because he does come from the Belichick coaching tree, and he's had success there as the OC with Brady, right? I think he truly thinks that he is Belichick, or he tries to replicate a lot of the Belichick mantras or styles of coaching, the militant type stuff, you know, stuff, command, respect, and all that. But he hasn't earned it, and the players do not respect him, and he tries to lead the way Belichick does, and it just, from what I understand, it's not going to work. It does not work. And it's been very problematic for him as a head coach. And, you know, listen, the Raiders are not totally out of it. They're playing the Giants. Vegas has them favored by 1.5 because statistically, here we go. The very first game after a coach is fired, teams win at a higher clip than they lose. And a lot of people are on this Vegas bandwagon, but I actually think the Giants are going to win. They're getting Daniel Jones back. They're facing Aiden O'Connell, a rookie quarterback. This is only his second game action. So I actually think the Giants will win this one. I was leaning back and forth whether or not I want to bet this game, but in the end, I'm not going to. But I'm telling you now, do not go and just be dumb enough to bet the Raiders, because there's a lot more that just goes into them getting a boost. I mean, this kid, Aiden O'Connell, he's a rookie. Yes, they've got Devontae Adams. Maybe they switch things up, but you're going to have new guys in different coaching positions, calling plays, and everything else. So just be careful of this game. I'm not saying they can't win, but I'm saying that it's going to be a lot closer than we think, and there's probably better games out there to pick from. And Mark Davis, by the way, what are you doing? This man, McDaniels, has 4 years left on his contract. By the way, head coaches have guaranteed contracts. So now you are paying two coaches to not coach your team. Because remember, the whole scandal with John Gruden, he ended up resigning in 2021. He had a 10-year contract, so that's being paid out. Plus, he's got a pending lawsuit going, or settlement. So that Mark Davis is paying two coaches to not coach between $40 and $80 million. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And really where they went wrong was when Gruden left, they brought in Rich Bisaccia as the interim. He was the special teams guy, I believe. He was their interim. The team loved him. They actually went to the playoffs. I believe he's the first interim head coach to take over in the middle of a season and take his team to the playoffs. And they actually should have retained him as the full-time head coach. But of course, Mark Davis was chasing bigger and better, and he thought that was McDaniels, and it really wasn't. So there you go. Okay, the NFL trade line was Tuesday. The Washington Commanders, well, they punted on their season. They offloaded multiple stars on the defensive line. First up, Montez Sweat was traded to the Bears for a second-round pick, while Chase Young went to the 49ers for a third-rounder. The 49ers just keep loading up on that D-line. Crazy. And what does this mean for the Commanders? Well, so first of all, it means that Ron Rivera is likely out after this season. I could tell you that much. The Vikings, no surprise here. Like I said before, they traded for Josh Dobbs now that Kirk Cousins was confirmed to have torn his ACL. Rookie Jaren Hall, there's the name I was looking for, out of BYU. He will start this weekend. But again, I'm assuming the plan is to start Dobbs the rest of the way. He was starting in Arizona. He should slide in and start here in Minnesota. And fresh off their loss to the Jets, the Giants traded Leonard Williams to the Seahawks for a second and fifth round draft pick. Great haul by the Giants. Absolutely great. You're not going anywhere this year. Offload a very good player who doesn't factor into the future, and you get a couple of solid picks. Okay, in other news, the highly touted high school player and five-star guy, Cooper Flagg, who I'm sure we've all seen his highlight reel plays and his, you know, tall, skinny stature. He has decided to commit to Duke. Okay, so that's a big, big get for John Shire and the Duke Blue Devils as they try to build on last year's season. What'd they go, like 29-7 last year, in his first full season since Coach K, you know, retired. So, yeah, big shoes to fill there. So that's a big get. All right, here's an interesting one. This happened like late Friday last weekend, but the NIT tournament is making big waves. It's a lot of controversy here. They are changing the rules, and it's a big one. So it sparked a lot of outcry from like the Atlantic 10, teams like the conferences like the Ivy League, the non-Power 5 or Power 6 schools, and I'll explain. So they changed a rule. They changed basically which teams are getting into the NIT tournament. There was no vote, there was no warning, and the National Association of Basketball Coaches were not informed. However, an email did go out a whopping 30 minutes before the actual news dropped, but no one had any advance notice that the 2024 NIT would undergo a huge change. They have eliminated automatic bids for all regular season champions who fail to survive their conference tournament, with those instead going to the Power 6 teams with the top net rankings who don't make the NCAA tournament. So you might be wondering, again, how can they give preferential treatment to the Power 6 conferences, right? Well, however, excuse me, though it is owned by the NCAA, this is where it gets, you know, the legality of it and how they're able to get around this. Though the NIT is owned by the NCAA, they operate separately from the national governing body. That's the key. So in 2005, the NCAA ended years of litigation with the Metropolitan Intercollegiate Basketball Association, that's a mouthful, and they purchased the NIT for $40.5 million. It was then set up as an LLC and is run by a board of managers. Okay, so those managers are not required to go through the typical NCAA route of committee or route of committee approval and membership vote to make changes to the tournament structure. So yes, the NIT very much can and did make these changes without asking anyone's opinions, permissions, or for any sort of feedback. Now, it actually makes sense. So, the reason behind this change was essentially to save the tournament. There was a report back in September that Fox was negotiating a new postseason tournament to be played in Vegas involving teams strictly from the Power Six, and it was going to be as such. The top two teams from each league that did not make the NCAA tournament would be mandatorily sent to this tournament. That would leave the NIT picking who, which teams would be left. You'd get no, you know, valuable teams. So, listen, last year's NIT finals was North Texas against UAB. I want to say North Texas won, but that might just be a guess. That game averaged 370,000 viewers, down 63% from the Xavier Texas A&M title game the year prior. It was the lowest viewed NIT title game in 12 years. And let's be real. Let's face it. Are any of us watching the NIT? I watched it because Rutgers got snubbed from the actual tournament and they played and they lost in the first round. And after that, I didn't watch it. So again, if no big time schools are in it, it's not going to sell. They're not going to make money and there's not going to be a tournament. So I understand where they're coming from. And yes, it does hurt the little guys, but it's all about making money. This is a business after all. So there you have it. Okay, we have a new twist. I love it. A new twist in the Connor Stallion sign-stealing saga, and it gets juicier, baby. Video has surfaced from a September game. I don't know if it was September 1st or whatever. September 1st game at Central Michigan. It was a home game for Central Michigan against none other than Michigan State, a Big Ten rival of Michigan. And this video is juicy. Connor Stallions is camouflaged, chilling on the sideline of the Michigan State coaching staff. Like, he's on the sideline with the Central Michigan coaching staff. He's wearing a gray Central Michigan cage jacket and a Central Michigan hat. He blends in, looks like a coach, even sees him pacing back and forth with a clipboard. And nobody knew that he wasn't supposed to be there or who this guy was. He's wearing glasses to disguise himself. And it's made the rounds. And Jim McElwain basically confirmed that this was Connor Stallions. And, you know, Central Michigan said they're reviewing it and everything. But here's what McElwain had to say.
Before we go any farther, we've obviously are aware of a picture floating around with the sign stealer guy. You know, our people are doing everything they can to get to the bottom of it. We're totally unaware of it. I certainly don't condone it in any way, shape, or form. And you know, I do know that his name was on none of the passes that were let out. Now we just keep tracing it back and try to figure it out. But it's in good hands with our people. And again, you know, there's no place in football for that.
It's incredible. It's crazy. How he got onto the sideline is unreal. And once they trace that back and find out who it was that got that sideline pass and gave it to him, oh, they're going down for sure. It's taken on a form of its own, this story. It's crazy. It's crazy. But it just came out right before I started the show, or maybe even in the middle of the show, that Michigan has finally, I don't know what took them so long, they fired Connor Stallions. So he was just fired tonight. So, yeah. And listen, Big Ten coaches, the Purdue coaches come out. People are heated. They want sanctions brought against Michigan. They want somebody's head on a stake here. And the writing's on the wall. Michigan is going to be levied with serious action against them. But they've already said nothing's going to happen this year because, again, Michigan is a top four team right now. They're undefeated. And it's a good story. It makes for a good story. It's going to be a story throughout the year as they continue to win and continue to progress towards that CFP. And wouldn't it be a ball buster if Jim Harbaugh wins a sort of quote-unquote tainted national championship and then just bounces after this back to the NFL because he knows they're going to be levied with heavy sanctions? The NCAA is already out to get him. They suspended him already for 3 games this year. So you got to imagine they're going to levy some serious sanctions next year. Wow. But again, stay tuned because every week we're hearing more and more about this story. All right. The Major League Baseball season is over. The Texas Rangers are World Series champs.
Season.
There you have it. The World Series champs, Texas Rangers. They have done it. The Lone Star State. So they beat the Diamondbacks in five games. Valiant effort by the Diamondbacks for sure. Just a team nobody saw coming, and they make it all the way to the World Series. So very valiant effort. This was one of the most improbable runs that I can remember of two teams in the World Series. I know it was the least watched, because there wasn't a whole lot of star power or big-time storylines really in this game, but it was still great nonetheless. I actually watched almost every game. Corey Seager was named MVP. He is the fourth player to win multiple World Series MVP trophies since the award was first given out in 1955. Sandy Koufax, Bob Gibson, and Reggie Jackson were the others. Seager and Jackson are the only players to win it with two different teams. Corey Seager won it with the Dodgers as well. Bruce Bochy is the sixth manager to win at least four World Series titles. Only Joe McCarthy, Casey Stengel, and Connie Mack have more. Stengel and McCarthy had seven, Connie Mack with five. Bochy is also the first manager to win a World Series for and against the same franchise. Beat the Rangers in 2010 as manager of the Giants. Here's what's crazy. They won this World Series largely without Max Scherzer, but without Jacob deGrom, who they will get back next year. Who's to say this team can't win it again? And they were able to win it without Adolis Garcia for the final two games. So, unbelievable. And then, if it doesn't get any crazier, Will Smith, the relief pitcher, guys, not the actor. Will Smith just won his third straight World Series with three different teams. It's unbelievable. You can't make it up. The Braves, the Astros, and now the Rangers. Three straight years, three different teams, three straight World Series wins. Crazy. He's just good enough, yet he's not. Just good enough to stick around in the league, but not good enough to stick around with one specific team, but he's a lefty bullpen arm, and he's invaluable. And that's how that goes. Another stat to blow your mind. The Rangers set a new record. I believe the Yankees previously held this. The 96 Yankees were 9-0 on the road. The Rangers topped it, going an impressive undefeated 11-0 on the road this postseason. The most wins ever.
Oh my God.
Without a loss. 11-0 on the road. And listen to this stat. Listen to this. They beat on their road, you know, road to the World Series. They beat the Rays, the O's, the Astros, and the Diamondbacks. R-O-A-D. Rays, O's, Astros, Diamondbacks. What's that spell? Road. 11-0 on the road.
Oh, my God.
Boom. Mind blown. So, again, congratulations to the Texas Rangers. And I'm happy for Jordan Montgomery because the Yankees screwed him by trading him. All right, again, some sad news to report. Bob Knight has died at the age of 83. The legendary basketball coach died Wednesday at 83 years old. I believe he died of dementia. Some believe he is the greatest coach to ever live, not just in basketball, but across all sports. And before I continue, before I go further, if you don't know, or if you didn't grow up in the Bob Knight era or didn't get to see him coaching or don't know enough about him, just search him on social media, because my goodness, some of the sound bites and the quotes from him are just awesome. Some of his stories, these are a good story there about Michael Jordan trying to motivate him for Team USA and just a lot of different things. I know there's a story about I don't remember this for sure. It might have been Portland. I think it was Portland, maybe. And they had the number one overall pick. And whoever the GM was at the time of the Portland Trailblazers, they called up Bob Knight and they asked him their opinion on who they should take. And he told them, you must take Michael Jordan number one. He is a surefire pick. You can't go wrong taking Michael Jordan. This guy is a Hall of Fame player. And lo and behold, they did not take Michael Jordan. And, you know, the rest is history. They should have listened to Bobby Knight and taken him. So just a plethora, a multitude of stories like that out there. He's a very complicated man, of course, mired in controversy. His coaching style didn't really, age well with this era of, you know, as he grew older and the players, you know, coming in, his militant type of style. He was a bit brash. He was a bit, of a curmudgeon, if you will, but he commanded respect, started, of course, at West Point, you know, so he expected excellence, right? And, you know, he threw a chair, he did a lot of things, and what really got him canned at Indiana, because that's where he made a name for himself, winning, of course, over 900 games, to be exact, what was it, 902 games and three national titles, of course, his 76 national championship Hoosier team is the last remaining is the last undefeated team that we've had. It's been over, what, 30 years since then. And you know, so what did him in was they finally instituted a no-tolerance policy with Knight because of his, you know, over 40, almost 50 years since the last undefeated team in college basketball. We had that Kentucky team, but they didn't win the national championship, the team with Towns and a bunch of other NBA players. So anyway, they put in this no tolerance policy, and I'll just tell this story real quick before we move on. But he, a freshman player by the name of Neil Reed, I don't know if it was at practice or whatever, he says, "Hey, what's up, Knight?" instead of saying Coach Knight or calling him Coach. And that's a no-no as a coach, right? You call your coach Coach. You're not his best friend. You're not, you know, his homie. You know, he's your coach. You call him Coach. And this kid, you know, made a mistake, didn't do that. So Bobby Knight put his hands on the kid and basically, you know, yelled at him for this. And I don't know, the kid might have, you know, said something or whatever, and that was the end of Bobby Knight. He was let go at Indiana, ending in a historic run there, and then he went to Texas Tech and kind of fizzled out. But I was reading this story today, and it's crazy. So the player that this happened to, Neil Reed, well, whatever happened to Neil Reed? He ended up, I think, transferring. He graduated from another school, and he went on to work briefly for ESPN, but then he, you know, ended up becoming a gym teacher at Pioneer Valley High School in Santa Maria, California. In 2007, he coached a bunch of sports, and among them, of course, being basketball, because he was a basketball player. However, in July of 2012, this guy died after suffering a massive heart attack at the age of 36. Imagine that. That is just crazy. So just an unbelievable story there, you know, kind of segueing into Bobby Knight's death. And one last thing I'll say, it drives me nuts. I see it in the pros. Like Tua did it recently, maybe when he was being interviewed in Germany, but a lot of these pro athletes will do it. They refuse to call their coach Coach, and they just call him, you know, by their first or last name, like it's their best buddy. It's like, dude, that's your pretty much your boss. Show some respect. Call him Coach, okay? It's like the kids in school that don't call the teacher by their name. They're like, Teach. Hey, Teach. What's up, Teach? It's like, that's embarrassing, okay? Show some professionalism and call it how it is, all right? So word of advice to any young players out there or whatever, trying to make, you know, maybe a high school team or even a middle school team or college team or whatever the case may be. Number one, hustle, do what you're told, obviously. But absolutely under no circumstances should you ever call your coach by their first or last name especially, God forbid, their first name, but it's got to be Coach and their last name or just Coach. So word of advice out there, because you don't want a coach to, you know, have any reason not to put you on a team or not to play you or to punish you. So there you have it. RIP to one of the greatest coaches of all time, if not the greatest. All right, the NBA in-season tournament. Again, it's on live right now. Let me just check in real quick. Got to turn my head and see the score of the Nets game because it's got to be almost over. It is in commercial, so I've got to check the scoreboard. Let's see. Where's the NBA? Okay, the Nets are up by 4 with 4 minutes left. The Knicks have cut it to 4. Wow, the Nets and Knicks games have the exact same scores, although it's reversed. The Nets have 99 and are beating the Bulls 99-95. The Knicks are losing 99-95. So these are both with 4 minutes left to go. The Heat are beating the Wizards by 22, actually. The Warriors are up 113-1. Oh, the Warriors are down 114-113. High scoring. Steph Curry has 5 threes. Oh, only 5. Under 10 minutes to go. He needs 2 more. That's going to be close. And then we've got a slate of games throughout the rest of the evening. So anyway, the NBA in-season tournament. Here's a refresher of how this works. Each team plays in a 4-team soccer-style group, like with the World Cup, with competition staggered from today through December, I don't know, I think the early part of December. I think it's actually 1 month. After group play, there will be knockout rounds, then a winner in December that earns a boatload of cash. I think it's every player on the winning team gets $500,000. The runner-up gets $200,000. I think semifinalist gets $100,000, and then one other team that you get like $50,000, I think, if you reach the quarterfinals, something like that. All of it, except for the tournament championship, will be in Vegas. I think it's saying the tournament championship will be in Vegas. I know what they're saying. Got to read my notes here. All of these games count towards the regular season, except for the actual championship game that will be held in Vegas. So they all count towards the 82 game standings. And so in case you turn on the games for the next month and you're wondering why teams are wearing weird uniforms, the courts are super ugly, bright colors. Like the Chicago court right now is red. The Knicks court is orange. The Lakers is going to be all yellow. Charlotte's is brutal. It's awful, but it's to signify this tournament and they're letting people know. So that's that. And that's pretty much it. So, yeah, enjoy. One last thing to note before we finish up this episode. We've got a good slate of college football games. Like I said, Ohio State is at Rutgers tomorrow at 12. You've got Georgia hosting number 12, Missouri. I really want to put money on Missouri. It's 15.5. I like what I've seen from Missouri. I went against them in the South Carolina game, and they pretty much eviscerated South Carolina. So I'm tempted to put money there because they've been a good story at 7-1. God forbid they were to win that game. They would jump into maybe the top 5 even. That would be huge. Michigan's hosting Purdue. Big whoop. Florida State Pitt. No problem there. Texas is hosting Kansas State. That's a top 25 matchup. You have Alabama LSU. That should be a really good game at 7:45 tomorrow night. You have Mississippi and A&M. That's all right. Penn State at Maryland. Louisville's an interesting one. They're 7-1. They're teetering on the brink. You know, they're one of those teams that could still possibly get in. Notre Dame, Clemson. Again, I talked about Clemson. They're kind of teetering. This would be a big home game if they could get this win, and I kind of like them in this spot. Notre Dame only favored by 3. Colorado, let's see if they could bounce back. They're at 500 right now, 4-4. They're playing number 16, Oregon State at home. By the way, Colorado, their game against UCLA, I believe it was, at the Rose Bowl, they all their players' jewelry was stolen while they were playing the game from the locker room. So I don't, there's been an investigation. I don't think they ever found the jewelry, but I know, I want to say Deion Sanders said that they should be compensated for all those lost items. A little bit crazy. Tennessee hosting Connecticut. Yikes, UConn's 1-7. I don't know how they're playing each other, but they are. Any other top 25 matchups? No, not really. And again, I mentioned Air Force before. They're playing 2-6 Army, so watch them lose that game or something, but no. And that's pretty much it. You've got Chiefs-Dolphins live from Germany at 9:30 on Sunday. I told you about that. There's some other good games. It's the first NFL game ever played in Germany. Guys, I don't know if I have much more for you. That's pretty much it. You got Seattle at Baltimore. That should be a good game on Sunday at 1. Dallas at Philly. I don't know why they didn't put this. Well, yeah, that should be the Sunday night game. Buffalo at Cincy on Sunday Night Football doesn't do as much for me as Dallas-Philly does, to be perfectly honest. And yeah, that's pretty much it. The last thing I've got is on this date in sports history, of course, right? So let me pull that up for you. Nothing great, but oh wait, I didn't even mention the Iowa thing that I wanted to mention. So Iowa, let me get back to this. Iowa is, they've officially announced that Brian Ferentz is not coming back this year. They put the weird stipulation in his contract that he had to average a certain amount of points every game. And it's been going poorly. So they just said, nope, to hell with it. You're done. And their game against Northwestern, the over-under for this game opened at 29.5. I think it's up to like maybe 30.5, but it's the lowest over-under in FBS history. So very crazy. As I look over, Nets are only up 2 with 37 seconds left. And we have a timeout, I believe. So yeah, got to finish this up to watch the last 30 seconds. So yeah, that's just crazy stuff going on in Iowa. I would take the over because that's just insanely low. It's unbelievable how low that is. So I just wanted to say that. Okay, back to the On This Date in Sports segment. We've got November 3rd, 2001. Hey, talked a little bit of Michigan State today with the sign stealing stuff. So why not? We have 2001, November 3rd, 2001. Michigan State clocks the ball with 1 second left. The clock read zeros. They put a second back on. This was what was known as clock gate. The Michigan announcers are going nuts. They get one final play, and they're able to throw a touchdown, and they win the game 26-24 over Michigan. It was crazy because Michigan State quarterback Jeff Smoker, he ran and he fell down at like the 1 yard line or whatever, tried to dive in, and then he got up. They went, spiked the ball, but basically the clock froze at 1 second when it really should have went to zero. So it's a classic. Jim Brandstatter and Frank Beckman were heated on Michigan radio. You could hear that call. It's on Twitter if you'd like. But yeah, so that's it. That's it for the episode, ladies and gents. Coming in at just over an hour and 20 minutes. I apologize for the length, but I got pretty much everything in that I wanted to say. Again, if you want my NFL picks, because I hit big last weekend, you want my picks, jump on over tomorrow or Sunday morning during that maybe 9:30 game if you wake up early and listen to my podcast Through the Ringer, our sister show with the boys. We'll be doing that podcast tomorrow at some point. I'll get that up before the night is over tomorrow. Again, for the 9:30 game, I'll just tell you right now, I like the Chiefs. I do like points in this game, but the unders have been hitting high at a 60%+ clip, so I wouldn't really mess with the over-under there. I like the Chiefs, what they've been doing on defense, so I like Tua to throw a pick, and I like the Chiefs to cover. I think this is a low spread. So there you have it. Enjoy your weekend. We get over, what, like 16 or 12? I think like 12 and a half hours of football if you include the 9:30 game tomorrow. So I'm excited. I can't wait for this weekend just to relax. I need to catch up on my Z's tomorrow because it's been a rough week. I've been going to bed late, waking up early, so I need some me time. So excited for the weekend, and it's a short week next week for me personally. I know a lot of people have off for the week, but I have Thursday and Friday off, so I'll take advantage of that, and I'll get an episode out earlier on Friday than I would. Like, this one is pretty late. But with that being said, everybody, enjoy your weekend. I'm going to go hopefully watch the end of this Nets win, hopefully. So I'm the Pody signing off. I'll see everybody next week. Enjoy the weekend. Stay safe.